And he wanted to play more. And he found a school that he could play at and hopefully start at. And he told me about it. And we gave him our blessing, and it was all positive. And we wish him nothing but the best.
And then I just, looking back, you played Virginia Tech for the first time since you guys had the tie in regulation. What do you remember about that game?
Just that we won it. That's it. That year we were not very good, so I didn't care if we won 100-99 or 3-0. I could care less. There were no such thing as ugly victories those first few years.
But ending regulation 0-0, I mean, what happened to have that, you know, out of all the things that have to happen to have a 0-0?
I mean, you would think somebody would score by accident, right? So it was, I mean, maybe you'll go back and reflect what a high level of defense was played in that game.
This year, having it back on the schedule, as you prepare for this fall?
Oh, I mean, it's a great environment, and Justin's done a great job there, and having coached in Virginia for 4 years at Richmond, you know, they're a good program. It'll be a great game. So North Carolina and Wake Forest is the oldest rivalry in North Carolina, and the history of our program with Wake Forest and North Carolina is the Big Four. It's, you know, in-state, Duke, NC State, Carolina, and because of conference expansions and divisions, we're in a situation now that we play North Carolina once every 6 years and we host them once every 12. Our kids want to play Carolina. Our fan base wants to watch Carolina. And so we did this because that's an important game to our fans, to our players, and to our program. We're not going to do it every year, but if we can just schedule that game every so often so we play them more often than once every 6 and host them more often than once every 12, I think it's worth doing.
Did that come from listening to fans and complaints, or is it something you guys were like?
No, it was something that we felt strongly about, that, you know, the shame of the conference divisions is, you know, we get Duke in the crossover, but you look at a lot of the Big Four now, and, you know, NC State doesn't play Duke. We don't play Carolina. Now, the State-Carolina game is their permanent crossover in our game with Duke, but those other two games don't get played. And that's a game that means a lot to our fan base. And we wanted to play it, and obviously they wanted to play it, which is why we scheduled it. Yeah.
Would you like to see the permanent rivals sort of abolished or go to 9-game schedule? Or something where you get to see more teams?
Well, here's what I would say is that would we like to play North Carolina more frequently, but not at the expense of giving up Duke every year? And if you're going to a 9-game conference schedule, then what happens with Notre Dame?
Sure.
So I think if you didn't have the Notre Dame rotation, that it would make sense to go to 9, and that's where things get complicated. And, you know, certain teams have other rivals that they play every year. I know, you know, Clemson plays South Carolina every year, and then you also want the opportunity to go out and schedule marquee other non-conference games, whether it be the kickoff classic or other games. And you do 9 plus Notre Dame plus other set rivalries, it pretty much, there's your whole schedule.
Would you like to get one of those preseason kickoff games?
Absolutely. I think at some point, if we got invited to play that, that would be an honor to be included in a game like that. So, I mean, right now we're in such demand that we're playing every Friday night in September.
As you go through a quarterback decision-making process here, what can one guy do to differentiate himself?
I mean, it's just an evaluation. It's how do you decide who your left guard is? How do you decide who your starting linebacker is? It's playing consistently. It's taking care of the football. It's making good decisions. And at the end of the day, it goes down to a little bit of a gut feeling as who has the best chance of helping us win games.
But you feel good with either guy.
I feel good with both of them. Yeah, I feel very good about both of them. This is a good problem. A year ago, it was a bad problem. 5 years ago, it was a bad problem. This is a good problem.
Dave Livingston was toward the end of the season last year, and then in between the season and spring practice started, you said that you wanted to dive into the data behind all the injuries.
Yes.
You guys had.
Mm-hmm.
You had a chance to do that now?
I have.
What did you find out?
Well, just the amount of injuries that happened early in camp, the amount of soft tissue injuries we had. We've looked at some of the breaks. We look at what we do in bye weeks. And we're approaching it, I think, much more with a scientific approach of really how we're restructuring our training camp. And I would say that now, but probably 90% of the people would turn around and leave. You'd be bored to death if I went through it. I don't want to hear it again. But after practice sometime, if you two do want a deep dive on it, I'd be happy to. But you'll be mesmerized.
Speaking of,
I'm happy to share it with you. Good. Yeah.
I'd take it then.
I need to try some of the things I've talked about.
What's that, today?
No, just like before in like my life. Like sometimes on my way home to swim meets, I would talk to my dad about defensive schemes. And I actually tried to play football in high school.
I'm not questioning your ability to understand it. I'm just telling you, like, it's boring. It's really, really boring. And at a media day that I get 15 minutes, you know, I don't think people want to get into GPS and loads and progressions and things like that. So I've spent so much time on this the last 6 weeks to 2 months with our strength staff. And we've completely redesigned how we're doing training camp and practice, and even the structure of an individual practice that we had experts look at it. And I said, tear it apart, be critical of it. And what can we do to try to keep us injury free? And it's really fascinating.
What has been the staff and the players' reaction to the increased marketing and promotion efforts?
I think positive. I think they're really glad that... you know, that, hey, we're getting this type of support, this type of backing, and there's such an effort to fill the stadium. You know, and we've filled it occasionally, but I think sometimes we filled it based on who we're playing. And I think we want to start filling it based on who we are. And I think this is a step to doing that.
Do you sense some momentum along those lines?
Absolutely. I mean, I was told the other day that I think in the last 5 years our season ticket sales are up 20% and over like a 5-year period. So, I mean, yeah, it's getting better. You know, until it's sold out every single game, standing room only, we're not going to be happy. That's our goal.
What's it like the first couple, 3 months working under John Kerr?
It's been really good. I mean, I have a history with John and we knew each other, so it's not like we're starting from square one. And, you know, I loved working for Ron Wellman, and I'll be always grateful to Ron that he hired me and gave me the opportunity and stuck by us through the tough years. And at the same time, I'm learning things and growing in different ways with John. So it's all good.
What impact with that new defensive coordinator that you have, how do you expect him to maybe impact the defense this year?
Well, I expect us to be better. And I think, you know, every coordinator has his own style, his own personality. And he's going to bring his own style and personality to it.
You signed a couple of elite receivers, the freshmen. Obviously, it's usually easier to play the further you are away from the ball early.
Mm-hmm.
Is Nolan or Don, do you expect to see them?
We'll see. Their training camp's important. I mean, they need to have good camps. They're both at positions that we have experience and we have depth. You know, we have Sage back. We have Scotty back. We have Stephen Claude back. Torian Perry. Waddell Jones, Kendall Hinton, Ja'Cory Roberson. Those are 7 playable receivers that are upperclassmen. Now, injuries happen and opportunities are going to come up, and those guys got to be ready. So their training camps are going to be really important.
Coach, what can you tell me about what you've seen from my kid, Edwards?
You know what? He's lost a lot of weight. He came in and he wasn't in great shape, and he's really worked hard. He's lost over 40 pounds. He's moving better than he's ever moved. He looks really good, much more athletic. If we can get him into the 2 deep this year, I think if that can happen, we'd love to get him playable this year.
And then Jalen Hudson, and under Gal, I guess, and what about him?
Jalen's impressed early. We haven't had any practices with him, but certainly his movement skills, his change of direction, all that have been really impressive, and he's got a really good work ethic.
What do you expect out of Basham this year?
Last time I talked to you,
yeah.
How's run defense now?
Well, it was certainly better in the spring, but in the spring, it's all that is something we have to get better at. And I feel better about it. I think we've got more answers. But the teams that ran the football well last year, we struggled against. We struggled against Pitt. We struggled against BC. We obviously struggled against Clemson. And everything we do has to get back to that stop the run first mentality and then hold up against the pass game. Well, I don't. Is it more crazy to not play your oldest rival? Is it more crazy to play them on conference? Or is it more crazy to not take your oldest rival and play them once every 6 years? We'd love to, and it's just that's the result of conference expansion, and it is what it is. But, we don't want to play them every year non conference, but we'd like to play them more frequently than the current setup allows.
Dan, you played App State a couple years ago with Scott Satterfield. What do you expect to see from him? Know about him?
He's a good football coach. He'll do a good job. I mean, he ran a great program at App. I've known him, not close, but at a distance for over a decade, and it's a great hire. So I'm sure in time he'll do a great job. Hopefully not too good too soon. But, I mean, he's a good football coach.
Dave, when you have the two quarterbacks that you have, what are the reasons to not play both regularly?
It's just sometimes when you're in a two-quarterback system, you never quite get in a rhythm. I think the position's different than a running back or a receiver in that way. The cadence, the signaling, all that stuff. But we'll see. Everything's on the table.
What are you expecting out of Basham this year?
Expect him to have a really good year. Become a more productive pass rusher, become more consistent against the run. He's made those spectacular plays for us, and I think it's just the day in, day out, everyday plays that we need more consistency from, but there's no question that he has a chance to be a very high-level player for us.
Do you see Red having a bigger role this year, I guess?
Much bigger, yes. He had a really good spring, and he'll be right in the mix to play a lot of football for us.
You talked a few minutes ago about the benefits of playing North Carolina and why that's a good thing in your mind. That was obviously a different coaching staff at Carolina when the game was scheduled. Are they still as open to it? Have you spoken?
I don't know. I mean, that's really – I let John Curry and Bubba handle. If they want to play us more, we'd love to play them. But, with your schedule – okay, there's Notre Dame on the schedule. What other games have you agreed to? Schedules are done so far in advance that it's a puzzle that you're trying to put together every year. But we're doing this. Let's see how it goes, and we'll probably reevaluate it.
Today I saw where Jake Simpson's on the disqualified list.
Yes, he medically is DQ'd.
Is that like
permanent? He's done.
So how worrisome are you at linebacker now?
I mean, certainly worried, but probably – we have if Chase Monroe can stay healthy, if Jeff Hurley can stay healthy, we brought in three linebackers, Chase Jones, Jalen Hudson, and Zach Ransom. We've moved Jaquez Williams into linebacker, and so we're worried, but we've taken a lot of steps to try to take care of it before we end up where we did a year ago.
Dave, your history has been taking a program that needs to get built, doing it, getting to a successful place, and then moving on to the next challenge. This time, you signed a long-term deal to stay at Wake Forest. What made this situation the one you want to stay at, as opposed to going on to the next challenge?
We're very happy. And I say we, I mean my family, our staff. You work, I think, really hard to get to a place like Wake Forest, and then you want to enjoy it. You want to enjoy the new facilities. You want to enjoy and it's a two-part deal. I mean, the school has made a serious commitment to football. If you look at our facilities,
been there. Yeah.
I mean, this isn't the same old Wake Forest. So it's kind of neat that you can end up with a much better job and you don't have to move anywhere. This is a much different job than the one I took in 2013.
Funny that you should mention the same old little Wake Forest. After three straight bowl wins and some of the teams that you have beaten, the hybrid, the Texas A&Ms, the NC States, do you find that people are now taking Wake Forest a little more seriously, and you know, or is it still that perception that you have to overcome?
I think if you ask the coaches in the league, I think they take us very seriously. You know, changing media perception takes longer, and I think people were able to think of us in such a way for so long, and there's certainly been, you know, those moments of 06 to 08, but those I think were viewed as flukes. And now I think we have something that is sustainable because of what we've built and the commitments that's been made. That you look before, in 06 to 08 was a great run, but without the facility commitment, the budget commitment, it wasn't sustainable. And I think what we've done now is sustainable.
With being in the Atlantic Division, your challenge is a lot different than the other division is to get the championship.
Why would you say that?
Because you get the national champion in your division. I mean, what do schools in the Atlantic Division, you in particular, what is it going to take to catch up with those guys and to be able to beat them to win that title?
Well, I mean, we haven't done it yet. And to me, it's good that they're in our conference, in our division. It's, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships. And right now, they're the gold standard in college football. And so that's our measuring stick. And if we're shooting for that, that makes our program better. You know, if we were in a division that didn't have Clemson and the bar was lower, you know, maybe we don't get some of the things we just got to make our program better.
So I'm not going to ask you about which quarterback is going to start. Because last year when I did that, a week before the game, you said one of them is going to start. So I'm not going to go there, but how much of a luxury is it, a comfort, to have two guys that have been tested, that are, you know, have had success, to be able to run your offense like that, to have two guys?
It's a good problem, and you still have to make a decision, and there's got to be a starter, and that's a decision we've got to make, you know, in the next 6 weeks. But yes, to have two guys that have played meaningful snaps in games, that have thrown touchdowns, that have had to come back from interceptions, that have won ACC football games, that's a good thing.
Are you the kind of coach who doesn't mind playing two guys, or
prefer
you
prefer not to?
Yeah,
I don't think that ever helps the rhythm of an offense.
You are seeing now with the ACC Network launch, teams are playing league games to start the season. Kind of thoughts on if you get into that position?
I mean, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, we're certainly going to enjoy the benefits of the network, whether it's exposure or revenues or things like that, and when you enter into an agreement like this, there's all things that we have to do. And if that means we play conference games early, we've got to give them content that they want to put on TV in September. So the old model of, hey, you play all your non-conference games in September and all the conference games, that's going to change. And it's changed with the SEC, it's changed with the Big Ten, and it'll change with us. It's college football in 2019, and it's not going the other way.
It seems like though hurt, like with the FCS games, like the interest seems to really wane a lot of times if you play that game fourth or something in your schedule versus playing in the first 2 weeks.
It does, but you know, having been a head coach at the FCS level for 9 years, you know, I know what those games meant to my program at Richmond.
Yeah.
The exposure, the revenue. I mean, it would have been hard for our program to survive without those games. And so, you know, to be able to play an Elon or a local team, and those teams can beat you. I mean, one of the biggest wins I had at Richmond was in 06. We went down and played Duke and shut them out. And they've got good football players, and especially when you play those teams early in the year when they're healthy. I mean, you know, at Richmond, we had a bunch of pros on that team. I mean, Hightower, the running back, started a Super Bowl. His backup was Josh Vaughn that was in the NFL. Eric Ward played professional football. Lawrence Sidbury was drafted. You know, we had a couple of DBs, Seth Williams and Justin Rogers, that played and had careers. I mean, we had good players there, and we certainly had players there that could play in the ACC.
First three games were on Friday night. the nature of the beast? What do you think about that?
Well, Wake Forest is in such demand now to be on national television that's what we got to do,
right?
What do
you mean, traditional as a coach? Do you like playing on Fridays? Would you rather
it's the new reality. Of course I'd rather play on Saturdays, and I'm a traditionalist, and I would love Fridays to be for high school, Saturday for college, and Sunday for the NFL. I don't think any college coach, and it's not just you're trying to save the world. we play North Carolina on a Friday night, and what a great game for us to have recruits to come to. How many recruits are coming to it? They can't. But it's the new reality that there's an ACC network. We have an agreements with ESPN. We sign contracts. There's revenue involved. I mean, we can complain about it, but these things help build our programs, and they help support our programs, and it's the new reality.
So, does that hurt you trying to get out on Friday nights to see kids?
Yeah, it kills us. I mean, but it is what it is, and we've... You know, we're part of the conference, and we're all on board with an ACC network, and we're all on board with the commitment level that ESPN's made to us, and this is part of living the commitment. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, we're on board, and yes, we want your revenue, but this is a part of our agreement with them, that we're in partnership with them, and this is part of the partnership.
North Carolina, even if it is a non-conference game.
It's really important. It's part of our history and tradition.
Is it weird that it had to come about this way?
It's a football game. Yeah. I mean, it's an in-state game, and I don't think our kids, whether it's conference or non-conference, will increase or decrease the meaning of it.
So you'd be open to doing that in the future? Of,
you know, absolutely. Yeah. Kid
Doran said he's been trying to do a Duke, but they just don't have, because they're in the same boat in terms of
I think all of us in North Carolina, part of our history and tradition revolves around the Big Four. And it's hard to have a Big Four when, you know, the way, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, but, you know, part of, you know, if you follow Premier League soccer, right, there's all these different things they're playing for. They're playing for the Premier League Championship. They're playing for the Champions League Championship. They're playing for the FA Cup. They're playing for the Europa Cup. They're playing for the Caribou Cup, right? And I think in college football, you know, we're playing to be the ACC Atlantic and the ACC champs and to play for the national championship. But we also want to go to a bowl game. And we want to be the best team in the state and be the best team in the Big Four. And I think, you know, all those multiple goals are important. And that's why we'd love to see all the North Carolina teams play each other.
Is there anyone you haven't played yet? Is that Carolina?
We've played Carolina. No. We played them my second year. We've played App. We have not played.
I guess in the Coastal. Have you played everyone?
No, I have. I've yet to play Miami.
Okay.
And there's some glitch of the schedule that this is the second time we're playing Virginia Tech, and we've still never played Miami.
When do they get back on?
Next year.
Okay. Does that almost feel like you're in two different leagues?
You know what? I mean, again, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And then that's the rotation. And, you know, we have a great division, and you know, you certainly develop rivalries within your division, and then we have the crossover with Duke, which is great that one of our Big Four rivalries was preserved with that crossover. And would we like to play Carolina more often? Yes, but not with sacrifice and playing Duke every year.
Would you like to see it reseeded where the classic ACC teams are in one division?
I don't know if that's in the best interest of the league. I don't know. How would I feel about that if I was Syracuse or BC or Pitt?
But those teams have sort of their own traditional rivalries with each other, and they're not necessarily playing all the time.
Like, yeah, I don't have the whole... I wasn't like here when the league went divisions. You know, to me, it was very intentional to split the North Carolina teams 2-2.
Yeah.
And that decision was made long before I was here, and, you know, certainly at a level that I'm not privy to.
Coach, what are your thoughts on Jake Fruitenball? What are your expectations for him this year?
I mean, I love Jack. You know, great story. Walk on, receiver, put on 45 pounds, worked like crazy, earned a scholarship, became a starter, became a captain, and now is a really good tight end.
In terms of recruiting, going forward, do you have a number for this year that you're looking to sign?
We're close to it. You know, I think we're never rarely going to be in that 25 range because we redshirt a lot. And so our cycle is not really a 4-year cycle. It's more like a 4.5-year cycle. And so our recruiting classes will probably they'll always be in the high teens, low 20s. Maybe a year it's a little more, a year it's a little less. But, you know, we're going to probably consistently be somewhere between 18 and 22.
And you said you felt the change when you guys are on the road or your staff's on the road in terms of the perception and recruiting from recruits kind of.
Yeah, I think there's been an uptick. I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth a little bit. You know, we've certainly gotten more interest in visitors from those 4- and 5-star kids, and yet the heart and soul of our program, you know, is always going to be kids that love football and are below the radar guys. You know, I mean, Phil Haynes was drafted, 2-star kid, no offers. Greg Dortch, 2-star kid, no offers. Jesse Bates, 2-star kid, no Power 5 offers. We have to trust our evaluations. And if that kid is a player we like and he's 4 stars, so be it. If he's 2 stars and we still like him, we're still going to recruit him.
Is that the beauty of having come up the way you did, like from the ground level, you learned to trust your evaluations?
Yeah, and I think it's also part of the beauty of being at Wake Forest is, you know, there's not this rush to judgment on signing date that, you know, the sun is falling and the moon doesn't exist because your recruiting class isn't ranked here. You know, we've had 15 kids sign NFL contracts in the last 2 years, and a lot of those kids were not 4-star and 5-star kids, and yet I think a lot of schools in the ACC would have loved to have Phil Haynes or Ryan Anderson or Matt Colburn in their program.
More awareness do coaches have mental health challenges?
Oh, it's with the openness about that the prevalence of that discussion in a staff room is probably tenfold from what it was 15 or 20 years ago. And so much of it is, you know, I think there's this adage that if you have cancer, that's an illness. If you have an ankle sprain, that's an injury. And I think destigmatizing mental health in that same way is that it is an illness. It is a problem, and you have to have awareness of it. You know, we've hired a full-time psychologist in our athletic department that we haven't had before. The amount of services and awareness of it is greater than I've ever been around it, and it's not going the other way. I mean, that is full speed ahead, and it's very much part of our overall safe health, wellness of our student athletes.
Has that altered the way you coach at all over the past 10, 20 years?
I don't know if it alters the way you coach, but I think there's this other dimension that if a kid isn't doing well and it's not injury related or sickness related, that this is now in that world of things that can be going on in a player's life that maybe you didn't consider as much 10 years ago.
Do you feel like every coach is as receptive to this stuff as you sound like you are, or is it like...
I can't speak for every coach. I just know that, just the data nationally of, you know, the percentage of people at some time in their lifetime are going to suffer from depression, anxiety, some type of mental illness. It's, you know, whatever, 1 in 5, 1 in 6, and whatever it is, it's probably underreported because I think there's still a stigma of saying, hey, I have this issue. Whereas if you had the flu, you have no problem going to the doctor. And I think part of it is just destigmatizing it so players are more comfortable talking about it, discussing it, and seeking help for it. Because like any sickness or injury, if you don't treat it, it's not going to get better on its own.
Dave, you're in a division with A.J. Dillon, Travis Etienne. You've got a pretty good running back.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Akers was pretty good 2 years ago. Coaches always say you got to stop the run and you got to run the ball well to be successful. When you have that good of running backs back in a league, in a division, is there an added priority to trying to do that? Or is it just you keep the same priority, it's just harder to do it?
No, I mean, you know, my thing is I don't know if you can ever be successful ever being one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if you just run the ball and you don't have the ability to pass, you become easy to defend. So my thing is I've always had great emphasis on balance. And I don't mean balance by 150 yards rushing and 250 yards passing or whatever these numbers are. To me, it's based on the ability to do both. If we're defended this way, we have the ability to run it. If they defend us this way, we have the ability to throw it. Because if you can't do both of those things, you're only going to get defended the one way.
right? How much does that help, or I guess how does that impact, let's say, a division race when there's so many experienced running backs back that are also capable of putting up big numbers? I mean, nobody's doing the wing T.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you play BC, and if you don't, if you allow A.J. Dillon to run, you have no chance of winning the game. And if you play Clemson and Travis Etienne can go off, you have no chance of beating them. And it was no different, you know, when you're playing Nyheim Hines, or Duke's had good running backs, or, you know, Elijah Hood when you played Carolina. I mean, if you have a legitimate running back and you don't slow him down, that's what you're going to get. And that allows teams to control the clock, control field position. For us being a tempo offense, you know, if we're off the field for 15 or 20 minutes and then we're three and out, those are, we can't overcome that. No, but I think there's this understanding of that's who we're competing with. So, yeah, I mean, this is Clemson. This is their facility. This is their budget. This is how they're having success by maintaining staff. And you can either choose to compete or become a non-participant. And, you know, I'm glad they're in our division, and I'm glad they're in our conference because they make us all better. And, you know, you look at what they did in the playoff run. They played what they did to Notre Dame and what they did to Alabama, right? I mean, they certainly had an easier time with those teams than some of their ACC teams. So I think that speaks to the quality of play in our conference. Not direct conversation. I mean, we're competitive. We're not in the business of sharing trade secrets with each other.
Do you, like Dabo now, he got in, he was a young guy, now he's the most junior. You've had to be here a while. Have guys that stay here, is there like a leadership role in meetings?
Well, I mean, it certainly evolves. Certainly Dabo has a lot of credibility because of how long he's been in the league. You know, we get in our league meetings, and I think there's certainly a more experienced group and guys that have had success that have a voice. And I think Dabo uses his voice in a very productive way. Certainly, you know, as coaches come in the league that have experiences other places, Mark Richt gave a new perspective of all his years in the SEC. So I think we all try to do things that will help and enhance the league. But we're not an open book that's going to share what we feel are keys to our success with our competitors.
Has it been interesting? The last 2 years has been a pretty massive turnover in coaches in the league.
You say that, but at our league meetings here, so four of the five longest tenured coaches in the ACC are all in this division.
Yeah.
So this is my sixth year. I'm already fifth. And you know, Dabo, Steve, Dave, and myself, other than Cut.
Cut's the only one.
Yeah, so our side has had a lot of stability. I think the Coastal has had a lot less stability.
Who are your coaching mentors when you think about, whether it's from the beginning or maybe midway through your career, that stand out to you that you would draw upon things they
do? Well, I'm very fortunate. One of them's on my staff. So my first coordinator's job, I worked for a guy, Kevin Higgins, that was a mentor to me, and he's now my receiver coach. And there's certainly other head coaches that I'm friendly with that I share ideas with. Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is a guy that we'll occasionally have conversations, and a few months ago we got together and shared ideas. To me, very similar schools, very similar jobs, similar challenges. We don't play them. We rarely are in recruiting battles with them. Not never, but to me, that's a safe ally, that a guy that I like, trust, respect, and we can share ideas that we won't use against each other.
Is there a program that you see, like, on the high end of what Wake Forest can do? Like, is it a Stanford? I mean, I know it's a much bigger school, but just in general, kind of.
Yeah, I think the whole model of
Or you mentioned Northwestern.
I mean, Northwestern. I mean, I think what's unique about college football is a sport that the high academic private schools have done well. Stanford has done a great job, certainly Northwestern. Certainly Vanderbilt had a run for a while there. Duke's been a very competitive program. You know, so there is a, you know, it's, again, this whole idea of small, private, you know, to me, those are, I've said this for 5 years, those are the reasons we're going to be successful, not an excuse to not be.
Duke's been successful, less fan support than you guys even get, probably, in terms of just kind of the amount of people.
Can you say that again?
I said Duke's been successful with probably less fan support in the stands and that kind of thing over the...
Then we say, let's say that again.
So, I mean, I guess that kind of shows that part of it is, if the school's investing like the way you're talking about...
Yeah, it's been a steady climb. And again, we're not where we want to be, but we're better than we were. But that's a constant, like, we haven't peaked. I think we're capable of accomplishing more. So,
Coach, we got 3 minutes until you've got to be back out on Radio Row. So
okay.
You want to take a final question or two from this group?
Is there any situation other than an injury that would have you named a quarterback for the last 10 days or so? I mean, based on, that's kind of the formula that you've used in the past couple of years.
No, I don't know how that helps us. You know, that we have yet to go through a season with one healthy quarterback. So to have multiple guys thinking that and preparing as a starter only helps our football team.
In the big room out there, were you kind of surprised until Connor asked that you had no quarterback questions until almost the end?
No, every Radio Row interview I had a quarterback question. So, I mean, I you know, with all these interviews, you kind of lose track where the questions come from.
Right.
And this is the point in the day that I can feel my jaw moving.
One last question for Coach.